broadcasting worldwide.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. This is Mark Kohler, yours truly, with my amazing co-host, Matt Sorensen, rocking the airwaves, talking about saving taxes, building wealth, protecting our assets, just love it, just kind of living the American dream. And we want to welcome all of you that are catching our show for the first time on AM radio across the country, 14, 15 different markets. Maybe you're driving home. And also all of you out there are iTunes listeners, faithful iTunes listeners, podcasters out there. You may have just discovered our show, and we want to say thank you for checking us out. We're going to try to wow you with keeping the topic of tax and legal planning refreshing, as in refresh your wealth. Matt, I mean, how'd you like that? I just came out with that. That was kind of new.
I know. It just kind of worked its way in naturally. You didn't even have to force it, huh?
That's so crazy. It's coming along.
Yeah. And keep in mind, you can also find us on biztalkradio.com or listen to the show via the BizTalk Radio app. There's so many ways to listen to us. We know, we're just trying to find whatever outlets we can to get the good word out.
Yeah, if you're in the children's section of Chuck E. Cheese, I believe they're broadcasting this live right now. So, you know, wherever you may be.
Yeah, we might get interrupted by some dancing bears here and there, but, you know, otherwise we're filling in between the dancing bears.
Matt, that was good. You're getting more funny. I have to say, that was awesome. That was really good. You got me going. Well, we have got a great show today. Matt, throw down. This is right up your alley. You've got a lot of little stuff here on this.
Stuffness, yes. This is a cool show because we have so many clients, and even Mark and I ourselves have done this, who go into joint ventures, into real estate investments. And as we talk about building wealth, you know, you can build wealth with paper assets like stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. You can build wealth by owning a business, or you can build wealth in real estate. We're going to be talking about real estate today, and we'll specifically be talking about joint venture strategies. How do we bring multiple parties together to do a real estate deal? Whether it's a fix and flip, a rental, I don't care what real estate deal you're doing. We're going to go over some strategies, things to think about as you're joint venturing with others in real estate deals.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking from the legal aspect, because what happens, there's a lot of great real estate podcasters out there. I won't even start mentioning names. We've got a lot of alliances and partnerships and friendships with a lot of podcasters out there teaching real estate deals. But guys, it oftentimes is the wild, wild west. Everyone's out there signing napkins at Denny's at midnight, and they're doing emails, and oh, we just JV it. But they don't think about all the legal or tax consequences. So that's our forte. We're not going to tell you how to make $1 million on that Atlanta redevelopment district. We're going to just tell you how to keep $1 million if you go do a deal. So it's all about the tax and legal structuring.
Yeah. Equally important, you know, like equally important in keeping $1 million is making it. So, and really, right. I think as you think of these things from a legal standpoint, you also think of strategies you can be using. Not just, oh, here's what I need to do to document the deal. You know, we're going to be talking about, oh, I can do that. Oh, I could put together it like this. So we're going to try and give you some practical ideas that come from the legal side of things so you can see how a deal can maybe come together.
Yeah, and there's no way we could cover everything. It's amazing what this is, just a Pandora's box of ideas, because we can start throwing IRAs into the mix. We can start throwing real estate professional classification into the mix. What's the tax ramification? There's a lot of variables. So on this show, buckle up, keep your arms and hands in at all times. We are going to rock your world with some tax and legal strategies to help you make more money in real estate and keep it. I'm going to quote the infamous Matt Sorensen, because this guy's got some great little handles and little, you know, sayings that just go right alongside this. I'm not gonna say them now. You're gonna have to stay tuned to get these, because these are precious. Now, Before we go any further, for you regular listeners out there, we try to throw down a tax and a legal tip right off the bat that's a little more non-denominational, no matter what your interest may be. Even if it's not real estate today and you're just kind of putting your toes in the water, we got a little tip for you every week that might help you better live your American dream. So we're going to start out with the tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Now, that I don't know if you knew that was pre-recorded or that was me opening my can of Rockstar right here in the studio, but you just let your imagination go wild. So Mark Kohler here with your tax tip. And since we're kind of doing the real estate topic, I wanted to throw down the real estate professional classification tip. Now, I had the another great consult with a client this morning. Matt and I are back-to-back oftentimes talking with clients around the country. We do our phone consults helping clients, again, save taxes, make money, yada, yada. And I had a client this morning, Matt, professional. I'm not going to throw down anybody's dirty laundry. This is attorney-client privilege conversation. But in the scenario, many of you can relate to. So we had this gentleman, a professional, and he and his wife had built up almost 27 rental properties over the last 5 to 10 years. Great little strategy. They're building cash flow. Their goal is to double that. I was just, it was a wonderful little call. Very common. Have calls like that almost every day. And the strategy was, why are we not maximizing the depreciation flow through losses from all these rentals on their tax return? And the gentleman was aware of this strategy, but he really hadn't got his wife up to speed or sold on the strategy. Because here's the tip, folks. If one spouse qualifies as a real estate professional, then you both qualify. The other spouse could be a full-time W-2 wage earner. It could be a corporate employee. It could be a small business owner. But if the other spouse qualifies to do real estate, then all of those losses from those rental properties flow through and are directly deductible against any other income. Now that, my friends, is a whole show in and of itself. I got a chapter in my new book, The Tax and Legal Playbook, on that. So if some of that is intriguing to you, you want to study up on that and look more into it. There's some tests, there's some time requirements, but it can be powerful. So there's my tip, Matt, throwing down.
Yeah, I mean, for some clients that have rentals in that magnitude, I mean, that one tax tip is tens of thousands of dollars in tax savings. That is a huge nugget of information.
That would be a golden nugget, or one might say a juicy nugget of information.
Yes, one might say that.
All right.
That's an inside joke, folks. Those are the worst jokes, the inside jokes that only Mark and I know.
Yeah, but you know, but many of you out there can use the phrase juicy nugget. I mean, whenever something comes across your plate that's just so cool, That's a juicy nugget. Feel free to, you can use that, folks. We license that to you as a listener of the Refresher Wealth Show.
Yeah, all the perks of listening to the show. All right, well, I'm going to run off with a legal tip now.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right, well, my legal tip today revolves around the statute of limitations. Now, this is not to be confused, Mark, with the statute of limitations. That's a different topic. This is statute of limitations. Now, the statute of limitations, I want to talk about if you're in a contractual arrangement, someone has breached the agreement, what's the time period you have to do something about it? This is generally known as the statute of limitations. So how much time do I have to actually go do something about this? Now, the statute of limitations is generally very state specific on a breach of contract scenario. This could be a promissory note. This could be a rental agreement. This could be a joint venture agreement, like we're going to talk about today, a partnership agreement. And let me just give you a quick few states, a smattering of states on the statute of limitations. California, 4 years. Arizona, 6 years. Iowa, 10 years. Illinois, 10 years. Kentucky, leading the pack at 15 years, along with Ohio. So there's a lot of variations amongst the states. This is very state specific. And it's, again, the statute of limitations, the time period you have when someone breaches an agreement and a contractual written agreement that you have with them, where you can go file a lawsuit to go claim that they breached the agreement. If you miss that window, you are, as they say, SOL.
statute of limitations. I like that.
Man,
that,
sorry, out of luck. Also.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess you could say that. Yeah. I love that. You set that up nicely. I also like to call this a lot the snooze, you lose argument. So this is, you know, one where someone really ticks you off and breaches an agreement. It's not, I got to raise my hand in the room and complain. You've got to file a lawsuit within that time period, people. So don't miss out if someone's really ripped you off.
Yeah. Like so it. Just keep in mind, you just need to file that case into court. Give yourself the time to, you know, get a good legal, you know, attorney hired, get the lawsuit filed, preserve your claim. Don't wait too long. All right. We're going to be back after the break here with more on the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Welcome back, everybody. Appreciate you listening here to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Rocking the house with a little heavy metal there. Hopefully some of you appreciate that. Little throwback music there. I was going to use the pun the other day with my kids, and I said, hey, I know I sound like a broken record on this. And they all looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, you know what a record is, right? And they're like, Dad, what are you talking about? And so I had to kind of, you know, pull out some classic rock, show them an LP, what it looked like on the web. And they go, oh, that's really interesting. You know, what did they do
did
back
then? Did grandma
in the 1800s?
Have one of those?
Yeah. So, you know, it was a teaching moment, one of those special moments where I feel a little older.
You could say, you know, like when your iPhone battery goes to like 1 or 2%. And it might like skip a song for a moment. That's like the old version of a broken record.
Yeah, there you go. And they're like, ah, you know. So anyway, a little off. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting old. All right. Well, okay. Well, folks, this part of the show is dedicated to a question of the week. We want to get your juices flowing. We want you thinking outside the box. We want you to participate in our show. So we pose a question each week, and if you are the first one to respond via email, you receive a free copy of Matt Sorensen's or Mark Kohler's book, autographed by either one of us. You get to choose. If you'd like me to sign Matt's book, I will do that. It could increase the value. But your choice, you can do whatever you'd like. So we have a question from last week, and I would love to announce our winner. But first, the question was, is the 529 college savings plan contribution for your child tax deductible, or is it the Coverdell IRA? Which one is tax deductible? And it was a trick question. The answer is neither. Neither. Tomato, tomato. Neither one is tax deductible. So you folks may want to contribute to a college savings plan for your children, but the trick, which is exposed in Mark Kohler's book, The Tax and Legal Playbook, is paying your children on the payroll and then allowing them to contribute to the plan. So now you're getting a tax deduction for paying your children and letting them contribute to their own college savings plan, kind of backdooring it in. So there's a great little strategy there, but just so you all know, the contribution to a 529 plan or a Coverdell is not tax deductible. And our winner is William Plakas. William, we sure appreciate you listening to the show, and I will be in touch via email, and we'll send off a copy of a book for you. Just want to tell you we appreciate you and thank you for participating in the question of the week.
Yeah, no, I love this question because it's going to give me one opportunity to maybe tell Mark something. He probably knows, but Alyssa's digging deep on this 529 question. So there is no federal tax deduction. We all know that. William knows it. And but there are a few states, like such as the great state of Arizona, that give you a state income tax deduction for contributions to a 529. Now, I remember I researched this a while ago. It was less than 10. I mean, somewhere between 5 and 10. We actually get a state income tax deduction. There's some limitations on it. But you can actually, there are some states where you'll get a state income tax deduction on contributing to a 529. But in no way is the IRS giving you one. There is no federal tax deduction.
Yeah. No, I like that, Matt. Great comment. And, you know, many of the 529 plans are sponsored by states, and therefore they are encouraging you to participate in their state plan by doing that. And good stuff. But, you know, great little side tip there, Matt. I appreciate that. Yeah. You know, little tax strategy there. I'm glad you threw down on that. So,
all right. Well, let me jump into the question for this week. All right. Now, this is this relates to my newsletter article, and the I'm just giving. If you want to cheat on this question, I'm just giving you the place to go. Okay. You can go.
There you go.
So, Mark and I write a newsletter article once a week. It's in our newsletter, which you can access at refreshyourwealth.com. We also have a blog role that feeds in both my blog articles and Mark's, any other attorneys in our firm at kkoslawyers.com. But the question for this week is, name one state that requires you to file a newspaper publication after you set up your entity. Yes, it is true. There are states that still think people read legal notices in newspapers to gather information. Or should I say, there are some state legislatures that are wimps and are freaked out that the newspaper industry is going to like write bad articles about them, so they won't get rid of this. This is a dinosaur legal requirement. But there are some states that make you still file something in a newspaper to say, John Smith set up ABC Inc. You know, it's like, you got to do it.
Oh, I know. Drag your knuckles into the century, folks. You know, that extra thumb is hard working on a keyboard. But, you know, quit being a Neanderthal. Let's get serious here. And you know what? It's just crazy. And you know what? The shocking part is it's not cheap. I mean,
right.
this has to be the sole source of revenue for some of these newspapers is this stupid publication rule. And it's just, you know, since we are on AM radio, we are FCC regulated. I know we would probably throw down a few swear words about this. So I won't. I'm just going to hold back here. You know, inside voice, Matt.
Yeah.
So bad. Such a stupid rule. So now how Matt can't may a person win your book?
Yes.
By responding.
So you write into Mark, M-A-R-K or M-A-T at kkoslawyers.com. Might as well send it to both of us. Make sure you get top of the list. And give us just one state. There's a few of them out there. Just give us one state that requires you to file a publication after you set up your entity. And we're going to read the winner on the air next week. You could be honored to have your name read on the air on the Refresh Your Wealth show and also earn yourself a free book of your choosing.
Yeah, and you know, this is another clear example of why it's not wise oftentimes to go online and try to set up your own entity. This is where people jack it up all the time because they go and set up their entity. All they think they need to do is file their articles for their LLC, and you'd screw it up. Please note our office, we have a paralegal setup service that's equivalent to the LegalZoom pricing structure. And so don't feel like you have to go that nightmare out there, the jungle of doing it on your own. Our firm itself can help you with a real paralegal doing all the pieces and parts. Okay, now, Matt, I'd like to kind of get into the topic a little bit here. If I may, I want to quote the one and only Matt Sorensen just on a couple little... I want to set the stage for this topic of legally doing a joint venture. Okay, now, Matt, you changed my life when I heard you one day. I don't know if you had planned it. You just came off, it just rolled off your tongue at a conference or it was a radio show previously. Matt Sorensen said the keywords, folks, that a bad legal agreement will make a good deal bad, but a good legal agreement will not make a bad deal good. So the point being here is many of you may have a great real estate deal, but if you do not document it properly, that legal agreement could torpedo the whole process. Now, I probably butchered that, Matt. Would you like to elaborate on your own quote?
Yeah, I believe the quote I had, which is, you know, Mark has taken to a whole new level there, is if you have a bad contract, you have a bad deal. And that really relates to even if you have a good contract, you can have a terrible deal. And I've seen that lots of times with clients that have a good deal, but they get in an argument about the contract. We're going to be back with here on the Refresh Your Wealth show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Thanks for being with us.
Well, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen, talking about now the topic of the day, legally documenting your joint venture agreements, your partnerships, your deals, whatever you want to call it, that wild, wild west of doing real estate deals out there on the streets of America. How can you legally document it to protect yourself, make the money, and keep it that you're trying to do and with that project? And I butchered it a little bit, but I got it out there. Right before the break, I quoted the infamous Matt Sorensen, who once said, a good contract cannot salvage a bad deal, but a bad contract could destroy a good deal. Was that better? Was that better?
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. That was, I might start using it that way, actually. That was a little better. Okay.
Yeah.
So do I need to cite you on that, or can I?
Yeah. No, that's good.
So I have the original work. Do I still get it? I mean,
yeah, your $1 royalty fee is in the mail. I will send that right over. And but you know, now here's one other quote from Matt Sorensen, because he's amazing. Is you said when you have a bad contract, you cannot polish a turd.
You know, yeah.
If it's bad, it's bad. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And what that
like
what that relates to, yeah, what that relates to is a lot of clients will send me something, and they'll say, hey, can you review this for me and try and fix it? And sometimes as I've, you know, the good old farmer friends that I have taught me, you just can't polish a turd. Sometimes you just got to tear that puppy up, just light it on fire and start over. You know, it's easier. Trust me. So, but this is a really important topic, and Mark and I are trying to make it fun, because we know this tax and legal stuff, you know, it can just drive you bonkers, but we want to try and entertain you while educating you. But I want to tell you first, what is a joint venture agreement? And what are the possibilities before we get into all these legal details? So first, a joint venture is simply a form of partnership. A lot of times when people talk about partnership, and how Mark and I will think about it, or a lot of lawyers will think about it, is an ongoing business relationship. So if Mark and I are going to get together and buy rental properties, we're going to form a partnership or an LLC. And Mark and I have some LLCs and we own some real estate together. That's more of a partnership structure. But you may go with someone and say, hey, let's you and I just joint venture on this deal. We're not going to partner in everything together. And we don't know if we're going to go long term with this or what. But we want to get together on a deal right now and just joint venture on it. Now, you're going to fill out a joint venture agreement, typically. That's called a JV agreement or joint venture agreement. And there could be lots of variations of this. This could be a 2-page joint venture agreement, a 5-page joint venture agreement, a joint venture agreement with an operating agreement for an LLC. There's lots of variations, but just keep in mind, joint venture is usually something very specific. There's a specific property and strategy you're going to undertake, and it's not something you're using over and over and over again to buy multiple properties. It's deal specific.
I like it. And we're going to hold off on any tax issues for a moment, and let's just focus on this. And what I want to say is that once you've got that joint venture agreement, oftentimes the next question is, who's going to enter it? Do you want to enter into that agreement personally or with one of your own entities? And this is something where people need to understand the term joint and vicarious liability. That if I'm going to sign that joint venture agreement personally, I got it, Matt. I'm going to sign an agreement, one or two pages, and it could be a great agreement. But if I sign it personally, I'm now part of a general partnership. And if anything goes wrong on that JV, who do you think the plaintiff's going to sue? It's going to sue the parties to the agreement. And if your name is individually on there, you just got sucked into a lawsuit personally, and they could be garnishing your wages. And I don't think I want my wages being garnished garnishing.
No.
Is that a Fletch quote, by the way? Did you know
that? that's a Fletch. Mark Kohler knows everything from Fletch. So, in fact, I got to watch it more regularly just so I can get up to speed and on Mark's level on Fletch quotes.
This is a requirement to be a host on the show. Yeah.
So, that's a point, because remember who you're partnering with, because you want to think of, and I love this, how you started that with the parties, because you want to think of, all right, how am I entering into this? Am I entering into this with an entity, the ideal situation, so you can avoid that personal liability, but also who's on the other side of this? Because if I'm personally in the mix, I'm going to be responsible for their actions. So you want to be, you know, making sure who you are joint venturing with, you have some faith and trust and confidence in them and their abilities and their ethics.
Yeah, I love it. Great. And this is where if it's It starts to bleed into the tax situation a little, because if you're going to be doing fix and flips, a rehab, a development, and JVing on this one particular project, you may want your S corporation to be that party to that joint venture agreement. Now, if I'm going to be doing holdings, and Matt and I are going to buy another rental property in a state, well, I may take my holding company, my LLC, and JV with Matt on with his LLC. And are we going to take title with joint tenants in common? Are we going to do a new LLC? I don't know. You know, so the parties becomes a really important issue that a lot of people just skate over. They're like, oh, sign a JV agreement. Now, I'm glad you're signing a JV. Heaven forbid, again, you do it on a napkin. But don't forget about the parties.
Okay, I love that. Now, we got, if you're, and I like this because this is almost going down the contract. So you're thinking, who's the parties? Let me just rattle off some other things to think about in terms of legal issues in the joint venture scenario. We're going to think of how's title going to be held. Mark, you mentioned that. And think about your position. If I'm a cash partner or a credit partner, or I'm the work partner, I don't care what you are. You want to make sure you have some interest in this deal on title. And the joint venture scenario comes together in a lot of different ways. Let me just give you a couple different examples. Let's say that Mark and I are going to go in on a deal, and Mark's going to bring in all the cash. I'm going to do all the work, and I may even put the property on my credit, so I get the loan in my name. Well, what's going to happen when we do that? The property is going to close in Matt Sorensen's name, right? The bank's going to want it to close in my name. And so we got to figure out, well, how do we protect Mark's cash that he invested? Maybe he puts a deed of trust in second position. You know, and we would outline that in the JV agreement. That's one thing we want to think about. But he wants to be protected on title. He doesn't want me to sell it out from under him. Maybe I transfer it to an LLC after the fact that he's an owner on, so he has some protection there. But you want to think about whatever position you're in, how am I protected on title? And maybe it's a tenant in common relationship. Maybe it is doing the LLC, as Mark mentioned. But think about title and think about how can I be protected on title?
No, excellent comment. And this is where the tax issues come into again, because when profit does come, who's the one at closing on the HUD statement at the escrow company getting the money? And then I've got to turn around and in this example Matt brought up, Matt would receive the money, and then I've got to have faith that he's going to pay me. And thus, that's where maybe that protection is with the second trust deed, or I've got to pull out the joint venture agreement and make sure I assert my rights, and then Matt may 1099 me for my share of the profit. So all these pieces and parts need to be on that agreement.
I'm definitely going to 1099 you for your share of the profits.
Jerk. Can't believe you're going to 1099 me. Jerk. Unbelievable. Okay. Now, I want to go back to parties for a minute, because I'm going to give a little shout out to my amazing co-host here, Matt Sorensen, is when you're doing the parties, this is where you might define any sort of retirement plan partner. It's the same issue. You can do JV agreements with an IRA, a 401k, a SEP, Simple KEO. This month, we're setting up 401ks for clients all over the country with our 401k fall planning special. That's a great tax write-off opportunity. But then turning around in March, January, February, you can use that same 401k you funded this year to be a JV with someone else. So now, oftentimes, we may set up a more substantial LLC when there's multiple parties. A JV agreement may be a one or two-party scenario. But again, this is where the party issue could really be expanded. Bring everybody into the party. Don't leave anybody out. I don't want to be left out.
That's right. That's right. I feel like we're going to talk so much about parties here, but it's such a big point. Is I think we take a step back and look at the joint venture agreement from a legal standpoint is, what we're doing in this agreement is we're bringing together different parties, and we're making it one big party, and we're bringing together what things do each people have that make a deal happen, whether it's money, knowledge, work, credit, you know, I don't care what it is, but a lot of people bring in together different things. And some people may, you know, everybody's bringing in some cash, everybody's doing a little bit of work, or someone's doing all the cash, someone's doing all the work. I mean, these agreements come together in a lot of different ways, but just think of that from a deal structuring standpoint. And I can't do a deal because I don't have cash. Well, maybe you can do all the work and find someone that has cash. Or maybe you have cash, but you don't have the time to do a deal. Find someone that, you know what I mean, that wants to do the deal and wants to do the work. And that's how you can, and that's a joint venture agreement scenario that can bring those two people together to make some deals happen.
I love it. Great comment. Now, but I want to just rattle this off. When we were ready to do the show, I'm sorry, self-serving comment here. I went and pulled a copy of my book, The Tax and Legal Playbook, and pulled up my chapter on partnerships. And I was just going to, I just want to rattle these off because Matt and I, after the break, we're going to mention maybe one or two of these. But once you get the parties figured out and you're going through the this joint venture agreement, let me just rattle off some quick ones here. What's everybody's roles and duties? Number two, who's going to put in capital? How are you going to distribute profits and when? What do we need unanimous voting rights to make certain decisions? What happens when we dissolve and when are we going to exit? How do we the expulsion provision? How do we get rid of a partner? That's for you, Matt. And then non-compete provisions, you know. There's all these different provisions that should be in a good JV agreement. So after the break, we're going to come back, hit some highlights, keep you on the straight and narrow, and just want to thank you for listening to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark and Matt. See you after the break.
Welcome back to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark and Matt. We're knee-deep in legal joint venture strategy and planning here. Mark and I are just trying to give you some tips and strategies on to how to be successful in real estate using joint venture agreements. And before we jump back into that topic, we wanted to go to our five-star reviews on iTunes. As many of you, our listeners, know, you can catch the show on under the Refresh Your Wealth podcast under iTunes. And it's a great way to go back and listen to prior shows. And for those of you who do like the show, please let us know by giving us a five-star review. We really like getting the reviews on iTunes. It makes us feel good. But more importantly, it helps other people find the show. The more reviews you get, the better you look on iTunes. So I'm going to read a prior review we had, a five-star review. This is from EOS Legend. And gave a five-star review, said, informational and actually entertaining. These guys actually make taxes and asset protection entertaining. Exclamation point. Great stuff. Exclamation point.
Oh, did he say anything about me, or was it just a general in nature?
I think he mentioned my name, especially Matt Sorensen. He is the best.
Darn it.
Mark Kohler's okay also.
Oh, I got an okay. All right. Okay, that's fair. Now I want to just say this, folks. We need your help here. We have got to break 100 before year end. That's our goal. We need some five-star reviews. And this helps you. Because see, folks, when you're out there and you're at the coffee shop and they're saying, hey, have you been listening to any good podcasts lately? You want to say, yeah, I've been listening to Refresh Your Wealth. And what are they going to do? They're going to pull up their iTunes. They're going to pull up the podcast and go, what? There's only 75 reviews here. What kind of bozo are you? You're not listening to a 100-review show? And see, you're going to look bad. You don't want to look bad. You want to look like you listen to the best. So help yourself out. Make yourself look good. We appreciate it. Get to iTunes. Please give us a review. Even if it's just a few words like, Mark, you rock. Matt, you're okay. You know, you could say something like that. That would be fine.
See, don't you want to hire Mark Kohler as your lawyer to have him argue for you? Wasn't that nice? He made this all about you, how you're really helping yourself more than us.
That's right. That's right.
Those persuasive skills. All right, well, let's jump back into this topic. I love that list you're rattling off there. There's so much to say about each of those different items. I want to talk about, as you mentioned on your list, Mark, duties and roles. And I just want to make a couple quick comments on this. I think a lot of times we think about who has the authority to do something. But I also want you to think about who has the responsibility to do something. So think about who has the authority, who also has the responsibility. So if I'm doing a JV agreement with someone, or this could be any partnership scenario, frankly, and someone says, all right, well, you're the work partner and you have all the authority to make the day-to-day decisions. We'll vote on major decisions and we got to unanimously agree. That'd be a common way to do it. But you also want to say, well, what responsibility do you have? I just told you what you can do. I didn't tell you what you have to do. Like, so if I'm the work partner, you're supposed to make sure the book, you're supposed to be following up with subcontractors, checking on work, you know, paying the bills, dealing with the other third-party vendors, visiting the property regularly. Whatever it is the set person says they're going to do, let's put that in the agreement so that they're bound to that. It's going to say how much cash you're going to put in if you're a cash investor, and that's going to be pretty clear and easy.
Yeah, Matt, this is a great comment. I just want to chime in here that a good JV agreement then has some teeth in it. Put some teeth into it. If you're going to tell this one partner this is their job and their responsibilities, if they don't do it, what are the consequences? And you've got to put a carrot out there for certain partners to do their job. They get more money. Or if certain partners don't do their job, there's some sort of penalty. And so a good JV agreement is going to always consider the worst case scenario. Just don't dry up this glowing skies are blue, we're going to make a ton of money JV agreement. You got to have the converse in there. What's going to happen if this thing blows up or a partner doesn't do what they're supposed to? What happens? Have it in there.
Yeah. Love that. Let's I'm just going to keep going off your own list if you don't mind, Mark.
No, I've got one too.
Okay. All right. So the next one I want to...
Yeah, you do it. Throw it out.
I got a great one. So let me run with this. I'll make it quick. Okay. Mark and I compete for time on this show, just if you didn't know.
Yeah. Just okay. Shut up. Let me talk. Shut up. All right.
Okay. It's my turn. Okay. All right. The next one I want to talk about is what happens if you need more money? Now, this is a problematic scenario sometimes when you have people who have different roles. So you have the cash partner, the work partner, the credit partner, and you say, all right, we need 10 grand. And let's say Mark and I went 50-50 on the deal I talked about. Mark put in all the cash, I'm doing the work and put in the credit. Now, let's say we need $10,000 more. Well, what's going to need to happen? Now, from my perspective as the work partner, credit partner, I'm going to say, well, you're the cash partner, so it's your job to put in the 10 grand if we need 10 grand. And Mark's going to say, well, I put in the money I was supposed to put in, so shouldn't we share the additional money coming in 50-50? And a lot of typical template partnership agreements are going to say, if you need additional cash, you're going to put in cash based on how you share profit and loss. So if Mark and I were sharing profit and loss 50-50, I would have put in 5 grand. He would have put in 5 grand. But that's not how it needs to be. So you just want to address that issue. What happens if we need more money? Who is supposed to put it in?
Yeah, you guys make the law. We write it. I don't care, you know, if it's like money has to go in on the third Tuesday when you stand on your head and, it's a half moon. I don't care. Whatever it is, well, let's write it in there. It's got to be in the agreement. Now, I want to throw out one other item on the list. Is exit strategy. You'd be surprised how many phone calls Matt and I have with people that are stuck in a JV agreement because they can't agree anymore. And this thing is in a rut and they can't sell the property and everybody has a different opinion as to what to do next. So it's really important that you do put in there, hey, here's what we're going to do if we can't sell, or we're going to put it up for sale no matter what, and even if we're not happy about the price. And I'm just talking about, again, that real estate idea. But whatever it is, have an exit strategy that everybody's on the same page on.
Mm-hmm. All right. One last thing I was going to talk about, I hate ending on this because this is probably all we're going to have time for, is thinking about the loss scenario. This is another one where people get confused. All right, how are we going to share losses? What happens if this happens to sell for a loss?
Yeah, this is a good one to finish on. Thanks, Matt. Debbie Downer. Nice. We're going to finish on losses. Okay, take us home. Just throw down. All right. I wanted a new 5-star review, but that's okay. Just finish on losses.
Yeah, so I just want to say this quick point here, which is if you're sharing in profits 50-50, you're generally sharing in losses 50-50 or whatever percent the profits are. And if you're the cash partner, obviously if the property sells for a loss, your cash is gone. You may have to have the service partner help supplement you to bear half of that burden of cash lost. All right. Well, let me just say, I know there's profitable real estate deals you can do with joint ventures. Sorry for leaving you on the bad note. Thanks for being with us on the Refresh Your Wealth show with Mark and Matt. We will see you next week.
Of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.